This is a recording of the August 8th, 2018 Audit and Finance Committee meeting to convene at 4 p.m. at the Chugach Electric Boardroom.
I have Director Reeves, I have Director Henderson, Director Crawford, and Director Hollis. In addition to myself, welcome, Harold.
Thank you.
And we have the agenda. First item to approve, and as we have mentioned, we originally scheduled this at 3:30 to accommodate the auditor, and then I moved it to 4, and so in order to honor that accommodation, we're going to switch around and go into an executive session and do the do that part of our meeting first.
So I move approval of the agenda as amended to move the strategic plan item 7 to the beginning of the meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. It's been moved and seconded for the agenda as amended, and I will entertain a motion for executive session.
I move that pursuant to Alaska Statute 1025-175C1, the Audit and Finance Committee go into executive session to discuss financial matters, the immediate knowledge of which would clearly have an adverse effect on the finances of the cooperative.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor? All right, we're in executive session. How are people feeling? Do we need a break? I got the signal. So let's take about 5-10 minute break. All right, can I call us back into session so we can keep moving through? All right, and we are gonna get to the voting parts and go through them in order because we have a couple of people that need to leave. So we are first going to go to the minutes. I'm up on section 3, number 3 on the agenda for the approval of the minutes. And I will take a motion to approve.
I move approval of the 7/25/18 minutes of the Audit and Finance Committee.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay, and then we will go. We never had any members to be heard, right? Just always helps to check. And then we are going to go down to new business and do the election of the Audit and Finance Committee Vice Chair. And I will entertain motions for nominations. I will entertain nominations.
I nominate Mr. Harold Hollis for Vice Chair.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Other nominations? We'll close nominations. Do we need to vote when there's only one?
Yeah,
sure. All those in favor of Director Hollis as the vice chair, please say aye.
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 All opposed? Okay. Welcome. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Jump right in.
We
need to go down to new business and item 8. We need to approve the 10Q. Do we have language somewhere?
I move that the Audit and Finance Committee recommend management file the Securities and Exchange Commission Form 10Q by the due date, incorporating any amendments to the document, which will be reviewed and approved by KPMG. Ms. Stewart and Ms. Hires will immediately inform the board in writing any material or significant change.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? All right, I will call the question. All those in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion carries. And now we are back up to item 5, which is the CEO reports and correspondence. We can just go through these with board questions. Do you want any opening remarks on your correspondence?
I think it would be good And actually, we have the second quarter 2018 financial information, and I think we could probably answer most of the questions about the financials in that presentation. So if it pleases the committee, we could have a report. And Jody, do you want to walk through that?
Okay. Absolutely. Sounds good.
Good evening. So this is a 6:30, I guess I got the controller, 6:30 update on our financials, June 30th, second quarter. Big 1 hour sales, we'll look at the three financial statements, and we'll also look at a quick update on ASC 842, the lease update, talk a little bit more about where Beth was going, basically. I know you've looked at this graph a number of times throughout the years, five-year retail graph. On the left-hand side, it's 2014 going to 2018 with the FAR budget on the far right. What we've seen is the declining sales basically over time here, and no different. I would bring to your attention the two interesting points here, I think, are 2017 shows a little bleep, an upward trend in sales, and 2018 still falling below everything else. But those were actually the two coldest six-month periods we had in this time period, which is interesting. So I think it just goes further to talk about the erosion of sales due to technology and so forth. And I think Arthur's group has just done 500 questionnaires that they've gotten back, and that feedback should be coming out. So I think it's going to help fill in some of the gaps. Where are we at in terms of that transition? When are we going to see the bottom? When, you know, potentially, substantially. There's some information that's forthcoming here. We were talking about that last quarter as well. You're going to see the same thing on the Seward wholesale side of things as well, basically same downward trend. And again, this is what we've been looking at pretty much all year as well. So you get off to a tough time in the winter start and you kind of stay that route. It's difficult to come out of that for a while. Looking at the financials, and this is a condensed version of what you've got in your packet essentially, but basically saying that the same information here in front of you. You can see through the first 6 months, the actual, the far left-hand column there, $2.3 million on a budget of $2.98. We're down $685,000 year-to-date. I will tell you, last year at the same time, we were at $2.1 million in margins, so slightly up on that. But when you look at what's going on in the variance side of things, the far right-hand column, really it's revenue right now. We're down in base rate revenue about 1.7%. We're down 2.7% in retail sales in total. So that's really what's happening. What's happening as well there is we're kind of recouping some of that through a couple of areas here. Power production, you see a positive variance of $745,000. And you're also seeing depreciation and amortization, a pretty big positive variance there as well. Those are offset, though, by transmission, distribution, and customer accounts, where we're over budget right now at least this point in the year. So again, $685,000, we're down, but we still, Sherry mentioned earlier, we're still intending to make a 6.4, 6.5 year-to-date margin. So not too far off of the 7 that we expected. This is just the standard pie chart that we show you, just to give you a feel for those expenditures, how big they are. I went back and looked at several years. They really don't change significantly other than fuel seems to move around a little bit more than the rest, and it's the biggest expense, so that's what you'd almost expect. The other ones can move a couple percentage points here and there, but generally that's a pretty good reflection of standard costs for us. On the balance sheet, we've got the asset and debit side of this balance sheet here in front of you. And it's a good thing. The balance sheet doesn't change drastically, but going down about two-thirds of the way, accounts receivable net, you can see that we, at 6/30, we're at $25 million. At 12/31 of 17, we're at $35 million. So, and that's that $10 million, 9.988 change in receivables is pretty typical of what we're going to see. It's seasonality, largely. We had a little bit of NSTAR sales in there at 12/31 as well, but not much. But so that's really just seasonality that you're seeing. That's really the most significant change on the asset and debit side of the balance sheet. The liability side of the balance sheet, what you're looking at here, significant changes, and again, I'm moving to the far right-hand side as you're looking at debt. We make an early quarterly payment, March 15th or so on our bonds. We also make some co-bank payments. You're seeing about $24,889 there on total long-term obligations. So we've reduced long-term debt by that amount. commercial paper is increased by $3 million. So the net of that, and you're going to see it on the statement of cash flow here in a second as well, but that basically is an offset. So we've probably paid down $22 million total in debt during this time period. And again, just not, it really isn't, the balance sheet's pretty static all the way across the board. So I'm just trying to point out the highlights here. And stepping into the statement of cash flow, this is a 6/30/18 versus a 6/30/17. How do we do this year for the first 6 months of the year versus last year? We start, as usual, with assignable margins, adding back three different areas here, operating activities. Your big items up top in section one are going to be depreciation and amortization, $17 million. And the other one that I mentioned was that it's a net decrease in assets. It's largely the receivables. When I was showing you on the balance sheet, $10 million difference, that's really rolled up in that number there as well. So that's cash coming in the door of $28 million in total. When you drop down to section two, cash flow from investing activities, the large item there is extension and replacement of plant. We're capital intensive, that's what we do, that's where we spend our money. So you can see that's going out of $9.7 million. And then the third area there, cash flow from investing activities, you're seeing the debt that we talked about on the previous page. You can see the short-term $3 million decrease, and a $25 million decrease netted. So all total, we're down $1.2 million in cash. That's what we used over this period of time. And we started 7.2, we finished it almost 5.9 or almost 6 million. So that's a look at the financials. The other thing I wanted to do was update you just real quick on 842 ASC. As you know, we spent a large part of last year on RevRec. We got that done. We came to you at the end of the year with RevRec and had done a lot of work on that. ASC 842, we started, I think Kathy gave you an update, first quarter. We hadn't really got into it too much since that time period. We basically, as Beth mentioned earlier tonight, we've been doing white sheets basically with them and trying to go through and look at the lease standards and try to ascertain whether or not Fire Island, Bradley Lake, and a couple others, are they leases, are they not? And I think for the most part, well, more than the most part, Fire Island and Bradley, I think those are the only two we've pushed through to KPMG at this point in time. They're in complete agreement, I think, at this point in time. They're interesting because they're both purchase power agreements. Fire Island is interesting because we take 100% of the offtake, and as a result, it really looks like a lease. Feels like a lease, but there's an interesting little item there where we make a variable payment on that. And because we make a variable payment, it becomes very difficult to quantify that variable payment over 25 years and try to figure out how you're going to put that on your balance sheet. How am I going to put an asset and a liability on my balance sheet if I don't know when the wind's blowing? I know how much we're going to pay per megawatt hour, but I don't know. So at the end of the day, Fire Island and Beth, KPMG agrees with this, but basically that will not go on our books as a lease per se. It still is a lease. The way we account for it will be exactly as we do today, through a purchase power agreement. So it'll hit the expense side through fuel. Bradley Lake is, we put the paperwork, we've done a lot of the documentation with Bradley Lake, with Beth as well. She's walked through it. This one basically, we only take a 30% share of Bradley Lake. And because of that, one of the major lease requirements is the offtake generally is upwards of 90%. If you're taking 90% of that output for your benefit, it's going to tend to look like a lease. It's something that the regs are going to say, put that on your balance sheet, quantify it. But because we only take 30%, our first assessment on Bradley Lake right now is that that will not become a lease on our books as well. We'll account for it as a purchase power agreement as we do today, and it'll continue to hit fuel expense. So that's kind of where we're at with the two PPA, the purchase power agreements up there. Easements, we're just stepping into right now. We've got a copy that's floating amongst us here in the accounting department, but we haven't pushed it out to KPMG at this point. So we've got additional next steps. We've got internal controls. We need to make sure that one of our internal controls that we identify up front is anytime we get a contract in, we've got procedures and a process in place that we can identify immediately, you know, that is there a lease? Is there a kind of a lease recognition on this? Is it possible that there's a lease there? So we've got to step through some internal controls, and you'll see those later in the year as well. But I think, as Beth mentioned earlier, I feel like we're on track and we're moving forward well. So that is the update for the evening. Any questions?
I have one more question on the financials, if we could go back to that.
There is a...
Which one?
On the financials, there was 190...
Was it the income statement?
I'm going back to the variance report and the write-up. There was marketable securities. We had a rate of return of -0.3%.
Yeah. So, and your question is, what's going on there?
What's going on there?
So, we've been in marketable securities and had that investment for some time, off and on, over the years. It earned maybe 4.5% last year on average. What that investment does is it kicks off a lot of interest and dividends. It kicks off interest and dividends about 4.5%, 5% on average. But we have to net those against any potential losses on the investment. We are, unlike the rest of us, Chugach has to mark the market every month. So what we have to do is we have to say, hey, what happened to the investment nowadays? That's part of our accounting requirements. We've got to say, hey, if the investment went down in value a little bit, even though it's still kicking off interest and dividends, we have to record that and recognize that on our books. So what we're doing is this unrealized loss that we're recording of one point, what is it, $170,000? We've almost earned that during that same period in interest and dividends, but it's interesting in the way the classification is. You see one of them and it gets pointed out. You don't see is the interest and dividends. I'll show you. I think on the interest income there, you can see $350,000. Even though we lost, and I'll just use, for example, $180,000 of that $192,000 is the loss that you're referring to.
Yeah.
If you go up two line items, the interest income that was thrown off on that, the interest income dividends, was in that neighborhood, just slightly under that. So to get to a -0.3%, it kicked off. I think we lost $9,000 in total on that investment during that period of time. As I mentioned, as you look at this thing over a time period, it's kicked off really, really well. But if you look at bonds in general, where they've been over the last 50 years, we're in probably a 4 or 5 year period of time where I can look at it and say bonds are down. And you'll see it with permanent fund dividend as well. Their bonds are down. Our bonds are down just slightly. In fact, their bonds are down probably 1.7-1.8%, and we're just slightly down right now. So the idea is that that investment, if we kick out of it, if we pull out of it and cash out of it, we take that realized loss now, and it doesn't change the bottom line, but we do take a realized loss on that. As we stay in it, we think, you know, we need to watch where the markets are going, and it's something that we're keeping an eye on. But there may be a time when we want to pull out as well. But right now, we may be in a cycle where we want to see that, and the interest comes back around, or the investment comes back around, excuse me.
Okay, it's just funny to look at it. I mean, it looks like it's a third of the variance.
I think Renee knows. I come to her and say to her, I said, do you have to show it like that? But it is. It's just the way it's presented on our financials. It doesn't reflect the fact that you actually earned interest income and dividends and two lines above that. It's hard to point that out. It's just, it's the way it's presented. So the net on that's really close to a zero-sum game right now for the first 6 months.
Tim?
Item is MFIORI and TIER, both of those numbers. Well, just tell me how we recover from that, because you see our goal, but I see, and I know you've said this several times over the last several years, but just for final comfort.
Well, the first thing I would say is MFIORI and TIER, you're looking at it through the first 6 months of the year only, and not the entire year.
Okay,
so it's an annual calculation. I think that's the most.
That's the best way to present it.
Any other questions?
Is this? Would you say this curve that you what we're seeing here is normal? Or a dip on the MFIORI and the TIER would be a normal
cycle?
Yeah.
In fact, last year we were at 2.1 million, so
you'd see the same.
It'd be pretty close, probably.
I would just comment that, to Director Chastain's comment, you could put a sentence of context in the variance report after that statement that would alleviate us from questioning that one. Like, if that would be the place. I mean, I realize the statements have to show as the statements have to show, but that could be there.
Well, and I have a follow-up, too, because back in that earlier slide on the variance report, we show that we're going to do a revised forecast, so we don't think that the MFI over I is going to return to what we had originally predicted.
I think we're lower than what we had originally predicted because we're at 6.5 million versus 7.
Right.
So we're not going to hit the 135 based on that exactly, but we'll be at a 130 or 131, 132 probably.
We're working on it.
Oh, I understand that, but I think the Jim needs to, the full answer to Jim's question is that we're also anticipating revising the forecast downward very slightly, although it could be.
Or we could have a really cold winter.
A really cold winter.
Yeah. So,
or a whole bunch of, or people put in swimming pools with electric heat.
More hot tubs.
More hot tubs. That's it.
And more electric vehicles.
Electric vehicles.
I just have a comment that I really look forward to getting the data on the decrease, whether it's economy or in conservation,
right.
Or whether it's just loss of customers and
And Arthur, we had a slight uptick in July from the preliminary stuff.
We did have a slight uptick, and surprisingly enough, that was really driven kind of by the really warm weather and the additional air conditioning and the fans is what we think. Because we were kind of running below during the month, and then the last 2 days we picked up, and that was with the warmer weather.
Tim?
On the leases on Fire Island, and since it's, it appears to be, would you classify it as a full payout lease, or what kind of residual? Because you're looking at 25 years, is there any useful life remaining? Having participated in leases a lot, I understand the change, but I'm struggling with, the only thing that qualifies as a operating lease is it's a variable payment, and in light of the changes today, I understand where you're at, but I also understand the huge.
And the useful life is tied to the contract. So the 25 years is supposed to be the useful life.
So there's no residual, is what you're telling me. I got that. So you're saying there's no residual, and that's what I'm asking.
Well, it's not to say that closer to the end of that 25 years, as we get closer, things could change.
Would that argument carry? Mm-hmm. Would that argument carry?
Well, it's similar to our depreciation studies where we go in and we have useful lives, and then, like we've mentioned before, we update and the useful life of Beluga changes and it's extended just by 10 years. I don't know. All we know is we have a 25-year contract, and that then is the useful life of that we
Yeah, I think the value of Fire Island is tied to the megawatt hour price that we're currently paying right now. So it depends upon where that would go, if that ever changed. But if there was some residual value at the end of 25 years and Fire Island was still producing and we could produce it, there was agreement to pay for $20 per megawatt hour, it might be different. You have an asset that's fully depreciated and it's been paid for, and now all of a sudden it's 20 cents on the dollar.
I realize that. I'm just looking at, accounting processes for an asset, treating it as a lease or an operating or a finance lease, and now it's a right of use definition. I agree with you. I'm just asking, and obviously no one's ever brought it up. But
It's interesting because it is a lease per se.
That is
the reason it's not going to be on our books is because of that variable payment. So I suppose if you got rid of the variable payment at some point and you renegotiated a contract, it could be different. It would potentially go on our books, and you would have an asset and a liability, correct?
Yeah, and the only difference between it and Bradley Lake is Bradley Lake is only 30%, we're only 30% over rather than 100% And that I can grasp. I can grasp that issue.
Yeah, Bradley doesn't look like a lease.
No, it doesn't look.
Capacity. Fire Island really does look and feel like a lease, except for that variable payment. That's the only reason that we don't have. It still is a lease. We just don't have to put it on our books. We can still account for it the way we account for it today.
Okay, and you feel. I don't want to see it reversed, and I don't think it will. I don't think there's any issue here, but it just for me, it's just kind of a rubs me a little bit sideways.
If you were to make a change to the contract.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
Okay, then you have to do that.
Okay. All right, are there comments, questions?
Yeah, just quick question to Bettina's question. Do I understand there's an analysis or a study going on as to the cause of the revenue drops?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
And what's the timetable on?
We expect to get a draft report from Northern Economics, who's working with us, later this month. And the original intent was to have an update to the board in August, but that may be delayed until September, given their schedule on completing the study.
And I apologize a little. I know I'm moving fast, and you're new director, and we talked a little bit about it the last meeting, I believe, so I apologize.
Yep. That would be good information.
All right. Other questions? Anything else, Lee, you want to bring to our attention?
I think we're in pretty good shape. The contract status report is pretty clear, but if there's any questions there, we can certainly take those. But I think we're okay. In pretty good shape.
Is there anything you want to add? Anything? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we are ready for director comments. So I'll start here.
There was a great show on Nova about energy, which I happened to watch the other night. It's somewhat simplistic, but it was really good. If somebody's got an hour and no place to put it, check out the Nova on energy.
Dr. Henderson? Crawford?
We had a really fun time at the RCA today. we got a lot of superfluous information that wasn't related to us at all, but then we got a presentation by GVA manager, and who would have known it, but we've had economic dispatch all along.
And, contractually.
And there was also a little bit of a show by Steve.
GDS?
Well, I mean, I was just talking about how long Steve McAlpine, so we had before we get an answer back from the RCA on the acquisition, that was kind of a surprise. So I don't know, he seemed a little irritated or something.
Yeah, the commission, he made the comment that they need as much time to review the acquisition of MLMP that it took us to negotiate it. He says, Lee, I think you started in December, so he says, I think you should probably give us 9 months to adjudicate. So I think what they weren't happy with, you know, the fact that we brought the BRU contract to him in a short time, asked for expedited consideration, and he was just reminding me that they would like more time for a major effort like this.
Director Hollis, anything
else? That's all.
Director Hollis?
Well, I'd like to say it's a pleasure being here. And as last time, I think Bettina or one of you said, I'll be drinking from a fire hose to get up to speed here, and I'm doing that as quickly as I can. So I want to thank everyone for the support, and I will plan to get up to speed absolutely as quickly as I can.
Well, welcome, and glad you're here, and I don't know, you were asking pretty good
questions tonight, so I think you will be well equipped to drink from that fire hose. And there is no such thing as a dumb question. I ask them all the time. Hopefully they're not dumb. Good meeting tonight, and you know, always thanks to the staff for, you know, even though our consumption is going down, it seems regularly, you guys do such an excellent job in keeping the expenses in line to make it not so dramatic. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
No, just I think it was a good session tonight, good questions, and I always appreciate those. And welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And I will welcome aboard, and I will thank you again for the flexibility in tonight's rapidly changing schedule due to the situation that has evolved in my family. So I certainly appreciate that, and echo the sentiments about the tremendous work that the staff does. Every meeting that I go to is just another example of how much work is done and what a high quality of work we have, what a great company we are. So I appreciate all of those things. And with that, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I'll
take that as a moved and a seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
We're done.